And welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you. And this week we have Mike. Say hello, Mike.
Hi.
Nah, and we don't have Doug because he's teaching the youth of our nation. AKA, we're screwed.
Well, maybe he's teaching them how to make good bets.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah. Nice stab. Nice stab. I was a bit disappointed. That's all right.
I don't know how you can bet against Vettel.
Well, you have. Well, after last year, they were down on pace in qualifying. And, you know, it was a good bet. Renault engine's not that great in a straight line. However, apparently they did something this year that made it okay in a straight line, and I took the brunt of it by getting screwed over. So.
Yeah, well. Lots of fun stuff to talk about tonight. Got ourselves some rally coverage to take care of. Australia review, and I think I quote Sean saying it was fantastic.
It was fantastic.
Formula One at Monza. It was fantastic. It's good to see. Ugh.
Yes, it was awesome.
I love seeing these natural terrain road courses instead of these stadium terrain GIMP Tilkey drones.
I was starting to say you have to throw the Tilkey drone in there.
Yeah. And then we'll talk a little bit about IndyCar, because all kinds of tiny little stories have come out this week, and we'll just kind of hit and miss those, because I don't think there's a whole lot of meat there, but there are a couple of things that I think we can gripe about. It seems to be the new thing for IndyCar. I'm a fan of IndyCar. I want IndyCar to do well, but they seem to be doing everything they can to be stupid.
This is true. Well, let's get off the depressing subject and get into rally first, shall we?
Yes.
And we went down under for Rally Australia. And right out of the bat, we had some issues, and those issues were Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen only rallies on Kimi Raikkonen's time schedule, and the FIA says that kind of crap's not going to fly in our actual championship. And so, that being said, Ice won. Was fined. They were fined. Well, they were excluded from the classification of the World Rally Championship due to the fact that they decided that they weren't going to run in Australia. They were then fined pretty much the entry fee of 16,000 euros. So the official statement said, having considered the provisions of the 2011 FIA World Rally Championship sporting regulations, and specifically Article 7.3.8, the stewards decided to require, is that what that is? Yeah. Fancy European words, damn you FIA. The team Ice One Racing to pay the entry fee to the organizers of the 2011 Rally Australia. To pay the FIA a fine equal to the amount of the registration fee, being 16,000 euros, to exclude Ice One Racing from the classification of the championship. So, there it goes. Already out the window. Apparently, you know, Kimi Raikkonen wants to do things on Kimi Raikkonen's schedule, and the FIA says, hey, cannot do things on your schedule. You think you committed at the beginning of the year to Rally Australia, therefore you must compete in Rally Australia, which would then say to some, hey, well, how come Vemmerichstein Motorsport wasn't penalized when they didn't compete in Sweden as they were originally set to? And that's because they made up for it by going to another, to an actual flyaway race. I believe it was Argentina or Rally Mexico, one of the two that was not on the docket for them, and they picked up that rally instead. So, the FIA is done with Kimi being Kimi, I guess.
Haagen-Dazs break, you know, a little too much Finlandia, couldn't make the flight. I don't quite know what the deal is, but, you know, the regulations are fairly specific that they have to attend a certain number of rallies. A certain number of those have to be flyaway rallies. If they don't, that's the end of their championship hunt.
Yeah, so
all 34 points of Kimi's championship hunt there. Anyway,
so moving on to the actual event, we did have Ken Block, the other kind of media
over before it started
people.
Guy.
Yeah, over before it started, much like the cult season. Oh.
Oh, that hurts.
I'm sorry.
That hurts. I think Doug was feeling it with KC this weekend, too.
Oh, my goodness. I was feeling it because I had Jamal Charles and Matt Castle on my fantasy team.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That didn't really do much for me, let me tell you.
No, I can't imagine. Yeah. Yeah, well.
But, basically, Kim Block's car went off-road, snapped the suspension, because you have to understand that the conditions...
On stage one.
Yes, it was stage one. But you have to understand that this was quasi not his fault, because the conditions in Australia for this weekend's rally on day one, anyways, were absolutely nasty. I mean, they were just nasty. They were some of the worst conditions. Some of the drivers are saying they were the worst conditions they had drove on ever. So there was some rain that came through. And the thing with these stages was, if you watch the video we posted on openpaddock.net from Colin Clark and the iRally folks, you could see that these stages were a lot of dirt, not a lot of gravel, and not a lot of loose material. And the rain, made it into a muddy situation, especially with the amount of water crossings they had to go across. There's a lot of water crossings in the early stages of the event, and the rain didn't help that, because just like in any kind of desert, desert kind of atmosphere, if you will, when you have a lot of rain like that, you're prone to easy flooding. So it was a bad day for Kim Block on day one. They hit a tree, broke the suspension. They would be back for the remainder of the rally, though. They would join the Super Rally regulations. So that was out. But Kim Block was not the only one to suffer, because Sebastian Loeb would also have massive issues, and he actually came up and clipped the side of on stage four, he clipped the side of a mountain, and that flung the Citroen DS3 onto its top and rolled it over once or twice. And that was the end, pretty much, of the rally for Sebastian Loeb. He would also come back under Super Rally rules, but he was well down the order by the time he actually got in. I think he was something like 30 minutes off the pace. So, bad time for Sebastian Loeb. And then Sebastian Ogier would inherit the rally lead, and Sebastian Ogier would crash out of the lead. So, as you can see, Rally Australia on day one, given the conditions, was not the place to be. Because Ogier would then crash in the sixth stage and cause some pretty catastrophic damage to the DS3. He would come back and compete as well, but he would not be as fortunate in his endeavors. So that pretty much left a Ford 1-2 with Latvala leading Hirvonen throughout the rest of the rally. However, it must be... must be brought into perspective that as soon as Latvala had the lead and they knew that the Citroens were not going to be challenging for victory, it was automatically instilled in Latvala's head that you will not win this rally. You will not. That's all there is to it. You are not winning under any circumstances. Your title is over. So They're like, Mikko is still fresh in the title. You are not going to win this rally. And Latvala was okay with it, unlike Sebastian Loeb and Sebastian Ogier at each other's throats. Latvala was very classy about it and said, we have a driver who has a chance at winning the championship. I'm not going to be selfish and take those points when my championship is over. So while it is kind of shady because, Latvala was obviously the fastest driver and he was going to win the rally, still, the championship comes first for the drivers, because Ford really doesn't have much of a chance at winning the constructors' title either, to be honest. So, the driver's title is something that they want to do to get something, and so they had – so Latvala voluntarily – well, really not voluntarily, because Ford told him that he's not going to win, but he slowed down without any reservation and allowed Hirvonen to win the rally. So – Mikko Hirvonen wins. However, the Citroëns, the evil Citroën Red Army, would not be... you would hear from them again. So, and that coming on the power stage. Mm-hmm. The power stage where, this year we now have the potential to get 3 points if you're the fastest of the stage. And Sebastian Loeb was, well, in fact, fastest of the stage. So he was able to secure 3 points and finished 10th in the rally. So, yeah, so he netted 4 points there in a great, you know, in a, I guess, great salvaging effort, if you will, because victory was out of the question for him given how early he crashed and how many stages he missed. So, so the way it went down, the final standings for the rally were Mikko Hirvonen taking the win by 14 seconds over teammate Jari-Matti Latvala. Petter Solberg, third place in the Citroen DS3, the lone Citroen. Matthew Wilson finished P4. Typically a pretty decent. He's a pretty decent, you know, gravel driver, I suppose. He's pretty good at those down under stages too. He's shown well in Australia and New Zealand. And then Khalid Al-Qassimi, top five. That is shocking.
Yeah, maybe that's you know, part and parcel of the fact that the two strongest cars wrecked out.
Yeah. So, yeah, and there wasn't a lot of actual World Rally cars in the event. You had, you know, obviously the factory Fords, the factory Citroens, then you had Qassimi, Wilson, Solberg, Van Merkstein, Loeb, Ogier, Block. So, I mean, you know, you didn't have very many, you didn't have very many quality rally cars in the battle. So, yeah, that does make sense. Production cars got well into the points. With Patton winning the production class. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. That's Patton. Payton. I don't know. He won the production class regardless. And Ken Block finished 19th behind both crashed Citroens. A guy who never finishes in the top five, and even Van Merkstein beat him. So Block suffered heavy at his attrition as well. He set a couple good sixth fastest times. But again, it was not on the final day, but it was not enough for him to do anything. So, I mean, there we have it. I mean, the championship, in effect, the championship has been blown wide open again. Yeah. On paper. However, the fact of the matter is this. You have Loeb leading the title with 196 points. Hirvonen is now P2 at 181. So it's by no stretch of the imagination really a two-horse race, but it is. So Ogier is probably not going. Ogier was effectively eliminated out of the title this weekend. There's still 75 points up for grabs, and he's down by a better part of 50. And we have two tarmac rallies with France and Spain coming up. And then Rally GB, obviously, being a gravel rally. So Sebastian Loeb is going to absolutely annihilate Rally France, as he usually does. And then, you know, Spain is going to be a an affair for probably Loeb or Ogier. And then Rally GB may go to one of the Fords. So, and the thing is, you know, you look at it, and, I mean, it's just tragic, really. I mean, the Fiesta has pace on tarmac, but it still can't compare. The drivers don't have really a good enough pace, I don't think, to contend for the championship, which is really sad. So, because, I mean, you know, and that was Ford's first gravel win and their first win that was not Rally Sweden. And so it's about time. Nice to see that the open paddock kiss of death did not affect Hirvonen, and he actually won a rally after doing an interview with us. That never happens. So you know, it'll be interesting to see. Also to note, that was Mikko Hirvonen's third consecutive Rally Australia win. Granted, the rallies have been kind of spread out a little bit, but it was his third win nonetheless. So good weekend overall. So you know, I guess, take what you will. The title is all to play for, but not really, because you're not going to win. You're not going to win those tarmac events.
It's nice that it's as close as it is, but if this weekend's rally went the way, you know, it should have, we wouldn't be looking at such a close gap. Mm-hmm. With only 15 points between them, I just can't see Ford even being able to continue that. I can't see Ford keeping Hirvonen in front of Ogier, unfortunately.
Yeah, it may be tough on those tarmac roads. He may. I mean, it depends, because like I said, they had decent pace and maybe enough to finish in the top five, but it's just going to be a really tough battle. It's an uphill battle for sure.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. So, but yeah. So,
oh, Petter Solberg has something to rejoice about. He's been lagging behind in rallies of late, and he felt that it was, if it's so large a step between the factory cars and the private cars, I don't want to throw my sponsor's money out the window. I had no chance in Finland and Germany, but now it seems to be working.
Hmm.
Speaking of his motor, he has received a new motor, and it has given him a new lease on competitiveness, I guess. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe this one didn't have as severe a lobe kill switch
in it. Kill it.
Yeah, indeed. Oh,
he's getting
man.
Out of control. Solberg's went rogue. So, well, the WRC was not the only folks with the show, though. The IRC was going as well.
Oh.
Yes, I know. It was kind of silently in the shadows of the WRC, but they went out to their Hungarian event, and Jan Kopecky wins again, furthering my fact that there's no way in hell that Juhannin's going to be able to win the IRC title as long as Kopecky's even close. So they're not going to let him, in my opinion. You know, he did it on the last stage. He did it actually very... he did it the last second. Andreas Mikkelsen was winning, heading in. And then after the 13th stage, Kopecky took the lead. And I'm not even 100% sure if there wasn't a kill switch involved in that situation. So, I don't know. I don't really know exactly all what went down in the rally, but I know that Kopecky won. He beat Neuville by 0.8 seconds. And then Freddie... 0.8 seconds. And then Freddie Loy was third. Buffet, fourth. Hermann Gassner Jr. was fifth. That's a name to remember, as he's in the running for a Volkswagen factory seat, actually, in the WRC. Other notables, Gardemeister seventh, and that's really about it. No Juhannin in that event, and no SWRC in Australia, so, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I guess Hannon still got a solid hold on the SWRC, but I don't think that I don't think Skoda is going to let him take the IRC championship when they've got a Czech driver leading the championship now, rather handedly. There was news that potentially Hannon could do more events, especially at the end of the year, because I think the last two rounds of the IRC paid double points. So potentially he could make an appearance there and try to take the title, but I don't think... And, you know, don't quote me, but I have a good feeling that they're not going to let him do that. So we want the Czech boy winning in a Czech car and everybody's happy kind of thing. So, but that was it for rally. No other real news or rumor to hint on there. So, you know, there it is. I mean, we move into France next, and that will be a hell of a battle. Between the two Sebastians, but one I think that Loeb's going to take. But we'll get to that when the rally gets closer. And we also had a Formula One race this week, switching gears. We were in Italy for Monza. So,
oh, how lovely.
Oh, yes, I know. It's always great, you know, because all year you have such kind of crappy, tilky tracks that you're dealing with. And then, you know, you get to these two events in particular. Silverstone's a good event. obviously, because it's kind of natural and just a natural pecking order of things. They've got such fast sweeping corners, all the corners with the proper names and everything. And then you look at, you go on such these little tilky runs, and you have then Spa and Monza back to back. And that's just, it's just, it's, I think a word the British would use, delightful. So, but before we even get into the race, as you remember, at Spa we had the blistering tire issues come about because the teams did not adhere to the camber limits set by Pirelli. This week, however, for Monza, it was said that you, in fact, will adhere to the camber limitations because we will not have another show like that. We will not, simply.
And though at the end of the race, when we saw the tires on the cars as they were lining up, they looked atrocious, but there weren't any of them that had that telltale blistering on the rims like they did at Spa.
Yeah, and here's something that I find really interesting is the FIA went ahead and had, you know, a release, as they always do. And it said basically any, or quote unquote, any car found to be outside of these recommendations will report it to the stewards as being in breach of Article 2.3 of the technical regulations talking of dangerous construction. In order to assist with the procedure and for use as reference, should you wish to disassemble any suspension components during Parc Fermé, we ask that you provide Joe Bauer with a qualifying setup sheet and a sealed envelope prior to the start of qualifying practice. Article 2.3 of the technical regulation states that cars can be thrown out of an event if the stewards deem that they are not safe. The stewards of the meeting may exclude a vehicle whose construction is deemed to be dangerous. They were really kind of, this will not, what happened at Spa will not happen again. And the thing that I found to be most interesting about it, really, is that, you know, why didn't you do this last week? I mean, you know, I guess it was too late. But, I mean, if Pirelli was saying, hey, our tires are not going to hold up because the weakest part of the tire is that inner wall where the blisters were occurring, you know, why wasn't it said then, hey, you must adhere to these camber restrictions or camber limits? I mean, why did they not have to adhere to them in Monza? Or not Monza, I'm sorry, Spa. Why did they not have to adhere to them in Spa, but then all of a sudden we have a blistering issue, which we knew was going to come about, and now in Monza you have to do that? Well, you should have had to have adhered to the limit at Spa to prevent that situation from ever occurring.
Yeah, I think it's rather unique, but, you know, I can understand from Pirelli's standpoint, they're starting to see a characteristic pattern as the teams put more and more aggressive camber because they can improve their lap times by doing the camber. But then that puts Pirelli in the situation of having a tire that goes off because it wasn't designed to do that.
Yeah.
And then the teams, you know, go about their normal business of complaining about the tires because the tires aren't working right. Well, the tires aren't working right because you're not doing you're not doing the right thing with them.
Yeah.
And then you go on from it. I think the FIA was right to go ahead and impose it on them. Kind of surprised that something like this wasn't done at Spa, though. I would agree with you.
Yeah, because, I mean, if Pirelli knows, hey, you can't run that kind of camber. Our tire, our product cannot sustain, you know, that kind of abuse. It just can't. And the FIA is like, meh, whatever. You know, we'll see what happens. And then all of a sudden you have these just ridiculous camber rates and, you know, blistering all over the place. And it's like, okay, well, now we know for the future. But at the same point, I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess something had to happen to enforce it, but still, I think that Spa, I mean, I think the whole year, given it's Pirelli's, you know, first, you know, year with such ridiculous compounds, you know, you think that they would have, you know, erred on the side of safety anyways. But then again, I guess we know the FIA is not always for safety like they say they are. It's just a convenient cop-out. So, But anyways, moving on, aside from that, we got into the actual qualifications of the race, and yeah, I got hosed. If you remember last week on episode 104, I bet Doug that Red Bull's pole streak was going to come to an end. I wasn't just betting for the sake of betting. I had statistics that showed that this would be, you know, if any time the Red Bull was going to fall off the pole, it was going to be at Monza, because both Monza and Spa were listed as bogey tracks for the Red Bulls because of the Renault engine and the high top-line speed, which the Renault has characteristically not had in the past. And, you know, the Ferraris and the Mercedes-powered engines, or the Mercedes-powered cars, you know, were much faster, I thought, in the top-end speed. And then I got hate, you know, I didn't really get hate mail, but I got people on Twitter saying, well, you're an idiot because, hey, guess what? You know, they pass people without DRS. Yeah, I get that. But also, let's take into consideration that Spa is much more downforce. You need more of a downforce package at Spa than you do at Monza. So, yeah, okay, there's still straight line speed concerns, but there's also that huge section two, or sector two, that is nothing but corners. So, of course, the Red Bull is going to do well there. Monza, you don't have those same kinds of corners. That many. I mean, top line speed is more. I mean, there's no downforce on those cars practically. So, you know, I thought for sure that Red Bull would fall off the wagon because, you know, downforce was less of an issue, even more so here than it is at Spa. And I ate crow. I was wrong. And Sebastian Vettel was able to take pole position, actually, rather comfortably by about half a second. Now, one of the things that was a bit interesting was that the McLaren Mercedes, and I think even to an extent, Fernando Alonso, were way faster at the beginning of that last run. And it was looking like they really had a shot at knocking off Vettel for pole. And then towards the last part of that lap, it just didn't come together. So much so that Jenson Button actually pulled off before he even completed his final flying lap. Because what I think happened was McLaren was like, hey, guess what? We're not going to get the pole position. Vettel just, you know, is absolutely lighting the sectors up behind us. We're not going to be able to catch that speed. Let's just pull off now and just cut our losses. And, you know, we're starting second and what, second and third. So, you know, we'll just take it to them on race day. So, but yeah, Vettel, half a second on pole. I mean, holy crap. That's just ridiculous.
Rather interesting. I mean, like you said, half a second. And I don't know, just looking at the race results and the way the weekend went, nobody really had anything for Vettel. On the start of the race, well, we'll just jump right into the race coverage. On the start of the race, Alonso was able to get around him, but it was pretty apparent going in through those first few laps where Alonso was leading that he was not going to be able to maintain it. He wasn't building any gap, and Vettel was right there. So the only, you know, right then you could see that the only chance that Alonso had of doing anything close to winning that race was to be off strategy of the Red Bulls, because either that or they're going to have to hope for a bunch of safety cars to keep them even close.
Yeah, which we did have a safety car right out of the gate because, one of the HRTs, wasn't it? Was it Liuzzi?
Yeah, I believe it was Liuzzi. Yeah, he got hip checked.
Oh, he did. He had a great start. He was going to pass, you know, his back marker competition, basically. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He was going to pass the Lotus or the Virgin, the other HRT. I mean, he got a good start, and he got hip-checked into the grass. And as Liuzzi says, I was just a passenger at that point, as he goes sliding through the grass. And this is the thing that's funny, is this. You know, you obviously go down that long straightaway, build up good speed, and then you have that really tight chicane. And then out of nowhere, because they were so slow, here comes Liuzzi through the middle of the pack.
Oh,
I mean,
geez.
We're talking about mid-pack cars. Nico Rosberg, you know, was one of them. Vitaly Petrov was one of them. I mean, he clobbered them, and he hit them hard. going through that chicane. So I mean, it was just a calamity right out of the gate of the start. Of course, you know, Alonso got around got into the lead, but hey, guess what? You know, here you have Vinantonio Liuzzi, you know, pulling his best rally impersonation and then clobbering half the field because he got hip checked by a back marker.
Yeah, that was bad because, you know, it wasn't that the contact caused, you know, caused the craziness. What happened was the hip check put him into the grass. And once he was in the grass, he was a passenger. I mean, there was nothing he could do to slow that car down, make it stop or anything. I mean, it was just a missile going into that ultra slow chicane where everybody was just.
I mean,
I've seen that happen a couple of times in the past, and it just scares the heck out of you because those cars. they're built well, but they're not built like Indy cars. I don't think they can sustain the same level of impact that an Indy car can, just simply because Indy cars are designed to run on ovals and take ultra high G impacts with concrete walls. You know, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it was a nasty impact nonetheless, and you know, it's just one of those things where you know, again, he tried to make an ambitious move. Nothing wrong with that. And but he paid for it ultimately, you know, with a heavy damage to his car. He was out of the race, took Rosberg, Petrov. I mean, ugh, it was nasty. So, and then I think Rubens Barrichello was even kind of clipped, if you will. He kind of clipped his wing trying to miss some of the stuff that was going on. So the field got behind the safety car, and wow, this is when the fireworks really came off because, obviously Vettel, Vettel and Alonso took off, and then, Hamilton had Schumacher behind him. Hamilton falls asleep at the wheel on the restart, literally. And Michael Schumacher would overtake Lewis Hamilton, and that is when the fun and games would begin, because Michael Schumacher absolutely was relentless in his drive.
I think this is the sole reason I enjoyed this race so much.
I mean, it was just brutal. I mean, you know, say what you will about the way that Michael Schumacher's, you know, return to Formula One has been. You know, a lot of people have been critical, saying that he looks like a fool. I, on the other hand, don't think he has. I think Canada this year, Spa this year, he's shown some real signs of brilliance. The Mercedes just is not where it needs to be to compete at the tip of the spear. That being said, I think that he was making a statement this weekend. I think that he was truly making a statement. You've heard a lot of Lewis Hamilton, you know, fans or what have you. Oh, Lewis Hamilton, yeah, he's one of the best of all time. You know, he's so good. He can overtake. He can do this. He can do that. And, you know, he's such a great driver. He's the greatest thing to happen to Formula One since sliced bread. And Michael Schumacher said, "You want to know something, boy? You want this position, you come and get it. But you ain't getting it without a fight." And we've seen some stuff from Schumacher that we just that is vintage Schumacher, to a T. And I loved every second of it. And I was actually disgusted to hear, I was just disgusted to hear Hobbs. Hobbs was sitting in the commentary booth over here for the United States listeners on Speed TV. Oh, this is just a poll. You know, he was all over the fact that, you know, Schumacher can't do this. Where's the penalty? You know, I mean, he's losing his mind over this, you know, obvious bias going on. He obviously does not like Schumacher. And, you know, from everything I've read on the interwebs today discussing the issue, most people say, you know what? Shut up, Lewis. You need to learn to drive. Yeah, he made a couple double moves, and the stewards told them, hey, stop with the double moves and give him room. And then he did. But you know what? The hard driving and the moving slightly over to get back into the racing line, that's okay. That's okay. He didn't even have a wing or anything alongside any part of Schumacher's car when he moved over. So it's not like he was, you know... It's just simply, it was simply hard racing. And that is what Formula One has been missing. All the drivers are been, you know, have been kind of prima donnas, and overtaking hasn't really been at a premium on these tilkydromes, like you said earlier. And Schumacher absolutely took the fight to Lewis Hamilton and said, if you want this position, you're going to earn it the old-fashioned way. And, I mean, it was awesome. You had Ross Braun. They were playing the Ross Braun radio clips. Michael, you have to slow down. You have to, you know, you cannot make double moves like that. And, I mean, you could sense a little frustration in Ross Braun's voice, but at the same point, it was just such a thing of beauty, such a thing of beauty, such great hard racing. And that was the truth for a couple guys, because then you've seen the move that Vettel, because Alonso was being a little roughhousing with Vettel at the start there, and Vettel made an absolute amazing pass on the outside. Jeez. Oh, my God, he schooled. I hate to say it because not many people can do this to Alonso. He's one of the best drivers on the grid, obviously, double world champion. He made him look silly when he passed him on the outside like that. It was just unreal.
Yeah, so. It was a race made for TV because at times during the race, the top five were the five world champion holders.
Yeah, yeah. You had all the top five champions, five champions all in the top five. It was just brilliant. I mean, it was, you're right, it was made for TV movie kind of thing. Yeah. And it was just beautiful. And these guys were just absolutely just rifling at each other. I mean, it was no holds barred. Alonso shoving Vettel all over the place. Vettel making passes on the outside like Cole Trickle style. Then you have Schumacher flying around Hamilton and then just fiercely defending it. And then it was funny because then you had Jenson Button, who's always viewed as the calm, cool champion. Real calm, level head, good on the tires. And he just goes right around both Hamilton and Schumacher. He's like, doo-doo-doo, never mind me. I'm just coming through, boys.
Yeah.
As you were. So it was simply a fantastic race. And I mean, it's one of those things where you always hear tracks like Spa, tracks like Monza, that's when the cream rises to the top. Those are drivers' tracks, and the best drivers will succeed. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened, because you have Hamilton, Button, Alonso, Vettel, Schumacher, all up there, just going to war. I mean, it was like almost like taking all the drivers of all time. Like, when you talk about, oh, it'd be cool if we could have like a fantasy grid of all these drivers, the best of now, the best of the past, all going, tooth and nail, just fighting it out. And that was almost like that in the top five, because you had Schumacher and Alonso, who were champions back, last decade or whatnot. And now you have, you had Hamilton and Vettel up there, who was obviously the new age, if you will. And I mean, it was just awesome. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. All the makes. You had Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren. I mean, it was a thing of beauty. It was awesome. I was loving it. I was shouting at the TV at, 8:30 a.m. in the morning in my pajama pants, a cup of coffee, and I'm already at war, man. Because I'm already getting ready for the NFL, but now I've got Monza, and I'm just like yelling at the TV. Vettel goes around the outside. I'm like, yeah, get him! And, Schumacher defending, and I'm yelling at the TV, yeah, take it to him, And, I mean, it was just awesome. So that is what Formula One needs to be. That is what I fell in love with. So not the engine noises, not the way the cars looked, the good, hard battles on those classic tracks. I mean, just awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Well. I didn't get to watch the race until Sunday night when I returned from Kentucky.
Mm.
So I was down with the boys and the brother and his son and my dad playing in Mammoth Cave and thereabouts. So it was a fun weekend and capped off by a good race. So
that's great.
Very good way to spend the Sunday, especially since it kept me away from the television around 1 o'clock Eastern.
Ass kicking. Indianapolis fans, they all picked out that little cyanide pill, and they were about to take it.
The sad thing is The good thing is he's a franchise quarterback. The sad thing is he was the franchise.
Yeah. And you know, I'm off topic for a second. We'll get to the final results in a second. But how in the hell can you go through and not groom another quarterback? And then on top of it, when you have old people that you're going to pick from, you pick from the worst old guy out there. You could have picked Brett Favre. He's old, but he gives you a chance. He throws interceptions, but he throws touchdowns too. Kerry Collins looked like a bumbling idiot.
I think the question is Brett Favre really willing to come and play another year on a team that, without Peyton Manning, has no chance of making the playoffs? Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. I really believe that. I think that Peyton Manning is a guy that transcends the position. He's one of the few guys who's able to do what he is able to do on the field. And I think they have a coaching deficit in Indianapolis. Caldwell is not a good coach in the NFL.
He's awful.
He was brought in as a thank you to Tony Dungy. That's pretty much it. Going on from Caldwell, you've got a draft strategy that rested on the laurels of picking four excellent guys back to back. You had Marvin Harrison, Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James. You had these fantastic drafts a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been able to really capitalize on the draft in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that are wrong and inbred with the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
Good thing was you had Peyton Manning that was able to pull it all together and make something happen with it. But anyway, that's enough of that.
Well, I know. But
traumatic weekend.
next year, they're talking about even potentially trading him next year if they get first round pick in the draft, because they're thinking about getting that Luck kid who's supposed to be the next Peyton Manning, if you will. And they're talking that if they get him, they either trade that quarterback or they trade Manning.
Oof.
How do you trade Manning after what he's done?
Oof.
Yeah,
I have not heard that. Not from Indianapolis sources. So.
Yeah, that was an ESPN source today talking about that. And I'm telling you, if you get rid of Peyton Manning, that organization implodes. Mm. I mean, it's like it implodes on itself.
It's already to that point, because I think the one thing that's happened is the front office has been exposed. Peyton Manning goes down, and they don't have a team left. And that's a really bad position to be in, because you're paying a whole lot of guys a whole lot of money, and you've got a whole lot of season ticket holders who are sitting there with utter crap game store. Doesn't sell tickets very well, and that seems to be the entire goal of the franchise over the last few years, as they pumped money into the offense, not into the defense. So anyway, let's move on from that.
Back on the topic, let's see. Race results, Sebastian Vettel takes another win. Jenson Button, quiet day at the races, takes second. Fernando Alonso third, Hamilton fourth, and Schumacher in fifth. And Mike, I think this all but seals up the title. I mean, granted, I mean, it's been over for a while, but I think now, I think they said that if he wins in Italy, or not Italy, I'm sorry, Singapore, if he wins in Singapore, he could clinch.
Yep. They're basically saying if he's on the podium, that's the championship. And that's fantastic for Sebastian Vettel. Not so good for Bernie Ecclestone, because it doesn't matter if it was medals. It doesn't matter if it's 25 points for a win. It doesn't matter if it's 10 points for a win, 8 points for a win, 2 points for a win. Whatever system you put up, Sebastian Vettel will clinch this coming race with 5 races to go. Ouch.
Yeah, that's not good business, Bernie.
I guess they're going to have to put in a playoff.
The chase.
The chase for the race, for the cup, for the thing. Is that what they call it on Midweek Motorsport?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well.
Anyway.
So, I'm not even going to mention the point standings because nothing really significant. Let's look anyways, just in case.
No, there is some significant things. You had Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso. They're both ahead of Lewis Hamilton. You go back 2 races, Lewis Hamilton was ahead of both of them. That's significant. It really is. And Lewis Hamilton seems to be losing his grip on this championship. Right?
Reality?
Reality.
Oh, I mean,
excuse me. Fernando Alonso, Mark Webber, Jenson Button, all three of them have passed Lewis Hamilton in the championship standings.
Hmm.
Just amazing. Just amazing. So, craziness.
That is a blowout, man.
Yeah. These point standings are wrong that we're looking at, though.
Yeah, these point standings are weird. I'm looking at them. I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, they've got some things incorrect on here. But anyway, that said, yes, it is truthful, though, that Fernando, Mark Webber, and Jenson Button are ahead of Lewis in the points championship. And I find it interesting that Jenson Button, as we go into the final haul of the season, seems to be driving cool, calm, collective, and his teammate is just blowing up the track. And himself. So, moving on from that, good weekend for Monza. Very interesting race. I'm happy that we got to see a fantastic race at a fantastic circuit. However, some interesting things were going on at Monza this weekend.
Oh.
And I'm curious what your thoughts are on why a certain Randy Bernard of IndyCar fame was at Monza.
Well, I mean, let's just be honest here. I mean, you know, it's just obviously Bernard's made it perfectly clear that he wants to lure in Formula One engine manufacturers that compete in Formula One, not just, you know, not just probably, hey, Lotus, what are you doing? But hey, you know, hey, Renault, or hey, Ferrari, or hey, you know, hey, Mercedes, you know, even, why don't you come on over and, you know, do work with us. He was even quoted, or he was even seen having dinner with McLaren's executive chairman, Ron Dennis.
Ooh.
Yeah. And also, though, the problem is that the circuits are still, for whatever reason, according to Pit Pass, reiterating their threat to Formula One that if they switch to an engine that is less than desirable and lower the revs, that they're going to bring IndyCar to their circuits, which we all know is complete hogwash anyways, because there's no way that's going to happen. But, you know, at the same point, I think that much is being made of this. I don't think that this was because, you know, Monza is saying, hey, yeah, Formula One switches these engines, we're out of here, and you want to bring your Indy cars to Monza? Yeah, first off, there's no way in hell that's happening. No way. And because Ferrari will not let it, and Ferrari runs that country. Anything for sport, Ferrari runs that place.
The interesting thing on this whole deal is that Randy came to Monza as a guest of one Luca di Montezemolo.
Oh.
The only thing I can think of is we've got multiple parties. Again, going back to the conversation we had when the tracks made this ultimatum, we've got multiple parties that want a cut when this next Concord agreement gets signed. Contrary to Bernie's belief that there doesn't need to be a Concord agreement and the team should just, you know, pay a entry fee for every race and go from there. There's a reason that Concord agreement exists, and that's to ensure to the television people that they'll have cars there. And once they has that insurance that the cars are there, you know, a contractual obligation that there will be cars there, then he has something to sell. But until he has a contractual obligation, he has nothing to sell. So him saying they don't need a Concord agreement is just complete hogwash. The thing that's interesting about this to me is the track said, you know, if you go with this engine, we're going to go to IndyCar. Well, wait a second. Who else has said things like that? Bernie said, well, the tracks, they won't be able to sell the product because they don't have this loud engine now, and I don't like it. So he's complained about it. Then you have Ferrari complaining about going to these engines. I don't know exactly what's going on, but you also have the continuing wrangling on this Concord agreement. I think that there's an interesting play going on. I think that maybe Ferrari looks at the tracks and says, oh, so you're interested in this. So they start to make some interesting plays towards IndyCar. And the next thing you know, we've got in name only, once again, this is never going to happen, but in name only, you've got a IndyCar Europe series that starts to make a little noise about happening as a rival to F1. Not under IndyCar, you know, basically kind of like the ACO gave the right to run the American Le Mans series here in the United States. It's not necessarily IndyCar that's doing it. It's the teams that are doing it, the F1 teams, but they've got the IndyCar name and they've got a little bit of prestige from that. Not really, but, you know. I don't know. I can't see this going in a good direction with the tracks. I mean, obviously that's a paper tiger and it's never going to happen. But if Ferrari gets on board and some of the other teams get on board, maybe that goes somewhere. I mean, because we all know IndyCar is not going to add a bunch of races in Europe. They can't afford to do that.
No, the teams can't afford to play.
Yeah. So.
Well, interesting perspective from you there, Mike. I appreciate that. Makes sense. Well, in other news, Red Bull has signed a new deal with Renault, the Renault-Nissan partnership. They are going to be receiving engines for the foreseeable future, 2016 at least, it says here. The extended engine supply deal will be for another 5 years and is going to work hand-in-hand to figure out and get a hold of this 1.6 liter V6 turbo for 2014, that coming from ESPN's Formula One section. So, what do you think? I mean, you know, we were pretty critical of the Renault before, given its inability to perform. Even I think, in my humble opinion, cost Sebastian Vettel a title the year before last. Because he was running really well and had a number of engine failures on the Renault. But now, anyways, it seems as though that with DRS curves and all that, the Renault is really on par with just any other engine as long as it's... well, the engine itself is kind of running on par with everybody else, because even the Lotus Renault, whatever monstrosity that is, even they were running really competitive straight line speeds, and nobody's really had none of the Renaults have really had any kind of a terrible engine failure, minus the frag grenade that was buried inside of Nick Heidfeld's car.
I really do find this interesting for a couple of reasons. You got this 2014 engine deal coming up, and Red Bull initially wanted to go with Mercedes. But they were held from doing that because of McLaren's arrangement and agreement with Mercedes and everything like that. Going forward, there's a lot of sounds that McLaren may be on the outs with Mercedes and has gone to the extent of hiring an engine guy, an F1 engine guy, with the possible outcome being starting an F1 engine department. Maybe not, but there's some potential there for Mercedes to possibly get their engine into a Red Bull, which would probably be a good move right now. But Red Bull's chosen to go with Renault. I don't know, man. That they sound like what'd they say? Dance with the one that brung you. So I think that's they got two world championships with Renault. I mean, well, one.
Two.
And another in the bag.
Yeah, right. Another one forthcoming shortly.
See that? That's a chicken. It's a really big chicken. It's not hatched yet, but I see hacks.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. It's only a matter of time, really. I don't know what's really gonna happen with this, but I think that Renault... Again, and we also have to remember that to a certain extent, Renault Sport, while they say they were committed, not that long ago, they were like, you know what, we don't really want to have a team. We just want to provide technology. And I mean, by, you know, jumping on board with the Red Bull and only providing the engine, you know, providing the engine, you know, eventually, maybe in the future, if they decide they don't want to play anymore, you know, then perhaps, you know, just do like Mercedes used to do and act as a technology supplier only, no official factory team, if you will.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Well, but apparently they're recommitted or something, so, I mean, it's really up in the air there as well.
The whole Renault involvement in F1 is also kind of an interesting thing because their flagship team is going with the Lotus branding and what have you, and that's going to be official, and they'll go forward with basically the Lotus name next year and probably not have the Renault name in there except as engine manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes for an interesting situation.
Well, that's true. Enough of that, anyways. Well, let's finish up here with the IndyCar segment, shall we?
Okay.
And Baltimore's TV ratings were actually a little bit better than what we than what they came out initially saying that it was ended up being a 0.60.
You know, that's fantastic.
Oh, it is. It's really good.
If Versus can get 0.5s, 0.6s on a regular basis, they're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Come the end of the season, I'll be shocked if – good grief. I'll be shocked if the Vegas race gets over a 1 on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
I will be shocked. I know Randy Bernard said, you know, if it's not 1.5, I've failed. Sorry, Randy. I don't see how it gets up there. I don't see how it gets anywhere close to a 1 the way things have been going. Because this year, the races that have made ratings, mm-hmm. they haven't been ovals.
Yeah.
You hear the crickets chirping when you watch the ovals. There's actually something going on when they go to road and street courses, though. And I don't know, man. I think maybe your thoughts of a resurgence of road street course racing interest is going on in the States, that or there's just a whole lot of road street course fans who are just craving for something to watch.
Yeah.
One or the other.
The Champ Car fans are finally coming out of the woods.
maybe that's it. Maybe you got a lot of Champ Car fans that are finally turning around and saying, hey, I can watch this thing, but not when they're on ovals.
Yeah, exactly, because their Champ Car boy is taking it to, you know, Will Power. So Will Power is taking it to the series, and they like that. They're like, see, we told you we were better the whole time. Or had better talent, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a good bit there for Baltimore. And that's really great for that, because, I mean, they put so much on the line to hold that race.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, you know... It was really, what do you call it? It was like they said, the dream. The dream had come true. They had run a race. They had defied the critics. And, you know, people watched the race. And they got good ratings. However, with the whole Baltimore situation, as you remember, a couple weeks ago we were talking about, or not a couple weeks ago, but last week we were talking about the suicidal safety truck driver, and he got reprimanded as well this week, as he was suspended for 2 races, wasn't he?
Yep, 2 races. They went back and looked into it. Okay, we kind of hit around it last week. I was wondering in last week's podcast if this was the guy that this was the truck that stopped to reposition the barriers there in the pace laps. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that was the truck. Those were the guys that went out there to move the barrier that should have been in the right place in the first place, but it wasn't. I'm still going to go back to it. How you can go green when you have safety trucks that aren't in their assigned positions is beyond me. I know seeing Kurt Cavan, he talked about it this week on Trackside and then in his Q&A and basically said, well, you know, this happens all the time when you have races going green with equipment that's, you know, still out on the track and what have you. Okay, I think that that's a freaking cop out, and I'm sorry, Kurt, I have no respect for you to make that statement. You've got a truck that's zooming along the track trying to find a place to park. Race control, just like we talked about last week, race control needs to make sure that that track is good to go before they throw the green flag. Don't go after the truck driver and suspend him for two races after the event, because where when he went to the assigned spot they told him to go to, it was full. What does he do now?
Drives away.
I don't know, man.
That was a really poor statement, in my opinion, as well. I thought it was a cop out, and
even if they have him on the fact that they said, hey, you should have gone to this place, we told you to go that place and you didn't, that doesn't even matter at that point. If you tell him to go somewhere and he doesn't, you still can't throw the green flag.
Yep. True statement. I do not disagree at all with you on that. That was poor decision making, really, on race control. And yet again, the truck driver unlike Alan Sue Jr. was all those times before, the safety truck driver is the guy who's going to take the fall for this one, even though, you know, technically, was he out of place? Yeah, but why didn't race control ask? So,
yeah. Well, in the end, what would have happened if, again, I hate to do this because we talked about it last week and I brought up the same thing. What would have happened if, worst case scenario, you had dead drivers because of this situation? There would be lawsuits.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be a real nasty situation.
If there were lawsuits, who would be held liable? The pace truck, the safety truck driver? No. The safety truck driver would not be found liable. The person that'd be found liable would be IndyCar.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, you can't go out and, you know, do this to a driver when that driver was out there as a representative of IndyCar and IndyCar was not watching out for him. In the end, if he was injured, he should have sued IndyCar.
I don't know, man. Again, communication and the whole race control thing is just,
atrocious.
Two steps forward and 30 steps back. So yeah,
it seems to be that way. Oh, well, don't want to beat on that too much because we made that a major topic last week. And
yeah, well,
I
let
think
me
everybody knows how
topic.
We feel.
Okay, let me introduce right this ahead. Topic because I was right and I have been right the whole time and I was vindicated this week. Because at Penske, you know, obviously we talked before, Penske does not want to, fund teams out of his own pocket. And this year they went out and got some sponsors, got the IZOD, the Shell, you remember all the shows we talked about, the, you know, 1,000 sponsors they went out and got in like a 7-day span. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like, like we said, Helio and Will Power are a lock at Penske and Ryan Briscoe's the odd man out. And I don't think this, you know, people will say it's because of his inability to get the sponsorship for a deal, but it also has a lot to do with his performance as well. I think that his fourth place or, you know, wherever he was in the championship is kind of, you know, ridden on the fact that quite a few people, the people who have not been at the front this year have kind of been shuffled about a lot. Like Briscoe would have a couple good races. Servia, you know, has had good races. TK has had good races. But Marco Andretti jumps up to like fourth in the title and then he kind of slides back. And then Briscoe jumps up there and then, you know, he'll slide back. So, you know, I think that at the end of the day, Power, you're going to get sponsorship for Power because he's the champ and he's amazing. You're going to get sponsorship for Helio because he's a 3-time Indy 500 champion. And he has a chance at winning a fourth every year. So he's going to get sponsorship. What has Briscoe done, really?
Yeah, there have been a lot of people that have tried to defend Briscoe this year.
You
because,
can't.
Wait.
I know. I'm just saying.
That a lot of the accidents that have happened this year that have kept him from scoring major points or winning races have not been his fault.
Okay.
He's been something of a lightning rod for EJ Visos this year.
Nice.
That said, looking at the history of his time with Penske, well, he had a season where he was close to winning a championship, which is, oh, jeez, I don't know.
Yeah, all he had to do was practically finish, and he wrecked the car.
Yep. So, yep, yep. So you know, he's in kind of the same spot as Willpower, other than the fact that Willpower wins more races.
Yeah. Willpower, well, and also, I mean, Willpower has put himself in a position to actually vie for the championship since then.
Yeah.
Briscoe has not. And, you know, so.
Well, in the end, it comes down to a few things with Penske. Penske has traditionally been a two-car operation.
Mm-hmm.
Many comments have been made that he prefers being a two-car operation. And right now, they're not probably going out of their way to secure crazy, weird deals to keep Ryan Briscoe there. In the end, he's the odd man out. And if you look at the field, where does he end up if he doesn't end up at Penske? It's pretty far down the grid before he finds a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Might be down in the Lola end of the grid.
Nice.
The Lotus end of the grid before yeah. he finds a spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not been there. I mean, it's just not consistent. So
yeah. Well, Randy Bernard supposedly went to talk with Lotus this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard nothing from that meeting. Nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to say where that's going. I'm still going to put my thoughts that until I see something different, I don't believe they're going to be there.
It's really starting to look that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's getting kind of shoddy.
Certainly hopeful for IndyCar to have three engines, but if they're going to get an engine partner that's going to come in and only stick around for a few weeks, that's probably a bad thing too.
Well, speaking, can we talk Aero Kits?
Yeah,
even though they're delayed.
What Aero Kits?
Yeah, exactly, none of your business.
I just found it interesting, an article came out this week on Speed talking about how Worth Research has been contracted to work on Honda's Aero Kit. At this point, this wouldn't be this wouldn't be until the 2014 season before we would see Aero, or 2012 season until we would 2013. Thank you.
Derp.
Until 2013 that we would see Aero Kits. But I find it interesting that Worth is involved in this conversation. Not surprised that he is, because he's been kind of joined at the hip with Honda. Worth is the group that came out with Honda's LMP1 car a few years back that was stillborn and for nothing. And then the economy fell apart, and I don't even know if that car ever finished a season. But the hallmark, they said, was almost completely CFD designed and and well, that's exactly the route they're taking with the IndyCar Aero Kit. I'm wondering if this is a good thing for Chevy fans.
I don't know. I think, you know, well, because if you remember, Worth did the LMP1 Challenger that took off the beginning of this year.
Yeah, that's also true.
And finished, you know, on the podium at Sebring.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not a failure like the last Acura LMP Challenger was, but this one, I mean, Worth did well with it. I think in the realm of aerodynamics, I think that Worth is a good company to have, and probably really the only option for Honda, given their, you know, previous working relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Given their relationships, given the fact that these guys have designed the chassis for them for Le Mans, it made perfect sense. So, no big surprise. Hey, another no big surprise. IndyCar has announced the $5 million bonus will go forward in a different form. See, if you have good enough teeth and have won an Indy 500... you may be eligible for $2.5 million. And the other $2.5 million would go to a lucky fan if said Dan Weldon won the race.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is a cop out of legend proportions.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked about it on the Twitter today with some folks, both on my personal account and the Open Paddock account, and they said that you can spin. You know, one person told me you could spin this in a good way because nobody answered the challenge. Well, no, people answered the challenge, and then other people did not answer the challenge because, you know, whether it be equipment wasn't available or not. But to me, I think that by nobody really accepting, you know, you could say, oh, well, nobody wanted to race in our top division. Well, also, I think, you know, the argument could be made, well, why the hell should we?
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen the way you guys have looked the last 3 weeks?
Oh, yes.
You look like a bunch of rodeo clowns.
Nice. Randy, if this IndyCar thing doesn't work out, you could always take a few of these drivers and take them back as rodeo clowns.
Fail.
I can just see EJ Viso running around with a barrel around him.
Oh, I know.
The ring.
Honk, honk.
barrel and suspenders, you know.
Oh, my. Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think this is just a weak cop-out. You know, people say what they will, and, you know, it's nothing personal against Dan because, you know, obviously I respect Dan. He's won an Indy 500. I mean, the guy is a great driver. He's won championships, but this is just a really weak kind of combat. But you had to do something. See, this is something. This is why IndyCar should have maybe not went public until with this idea until they confirmed, hey, we're gonna have drivers for this. Because now you're like, oh, we didn't get anyway. I mean, that's like Open Paddock coming out and saying, you know, for the fantasy racing that we're doing, we announced at the beginning of the year that we'll give out free tickets, two race tickets. To whoever wins the league, if you can beat us, which, of course, I quit. I think you quit.
Yep.
And I think Doug and Spike are really the only ones left. But at the same point, that would, like, be us saying that we're going to do that. And then at the end of the year, because we're going to lose and we didn't secure everything we needed, we're like, you know what? Yeah, we're not giving away them tickets. We're going to have to do something else. We're going to raffle everybody for the tickets. No, that's dumb. We're going to give the tickets at the end of the year for the fantasy race winner because that's what we said we were going to do because that's what we put forward. And we announced it because we could say with confidence that we were going to do this. Whereas IndyCar had no idea if anybody was going to sign up for this, and nobody does. And now, you know, you got these TV commercials coming on, $5 million to anybody who can beat IndyCar's best, and nobody shows up. And you're like, ha, 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 nobody wanted to take on our best. No. Nobody really,
you know, this is what it amounts to. IndyCar is such a blip on the radar screen that when the air traffic controller sees it, they think it might be a Robin.
Yeah, that's the thing. You and IndyCar, aside from the Indy 500, are not relevant to motorsport at this moment. You're not.
No.
And
no,
it's
not.
Sad because I wish it was more so that way. And it's starting to uptick, but you just can't go out where nobody knows that you even still exist, first off, aside of the 500, and come out and say, $5 million, come over and race our best drivers.
See, and NASCAR could make this type of challenge.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They don't need to.
No.
They got 43 cars at every race.
Mm-hmm.
They got, you know, the TV numbers are still good. The crowds are a little bit down, but they're down in everything this year. So,
and to be honest with you, some of the NASCAR racing has not been overly bad.
Oh, no.
It has not been. I'm just saying.
It's more machine now than man.
Yeah, I've joined the dark side. Yeah, no, I mean, the racing has not been overly that bad. I mean, there's been some instances where there's been some ass clown behavior, like, Richmond. There, you know, that whole Jimmy Johnson, Kurt Busch thing is a little stupid. But, you know, I mean, some of the racing's not been overly awful. And, you know, but at the same point, people feel like NASCAR on ovals is something they can get in and do. You're not going overly that fast. You're protected. Mm-hmm. You can do it. Getting into an Indy car and doing 220 miles an hour or whatever ridiculous speed you're going to be doing, I mean, it's just kind of a turnoff to some people, especially after the Kubica incident.
Well,
nobody wants to have a major accident where they're hurt or injured.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just knowing if they even think you're relevant at first at all anyways.
I think you're totally right. You know, you've got this situation where you've got a lot of NASCAR drivers that have simply said, we won't do it. Mm. IndyCar is too dangerous. I remember hearing Darrell Waltrip a few years ago, and yeah, okay, say what you will about him, but I think this sentiment is carried out in NASCAR, and he basically said, I'd sooner get into an electric chair than drive one of those cars.
Nice. Maybe Darrell Waltrip should, because he's annoying.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, yeah, so the $5 million bonus idea, it worked in that it got a lot of publicity for IndyCar, and now they're trying to make it sound like they haven't changed it too much, but I think it's going to backfire, and a lot of news outlets are going to get a hold of this and mock them for it, and they'll deserve it. And they'll go on and mock them. It's like, this is why you don't have people, coming over from other disciplines to run at this $5 million challenge. Well, here's the footage from Toronto.
Cue the music, exactly. Boys. Cue exactly. The music.
Oh, jeez.
Don't forget on the side to have the chicken doing the dance. But, GoDaddy, though, has come out and said that they're going to be, they're going to be the title sponsor.
They're going to be the title sponsor and probably all over Dan's car, too, since he's going to be driving next year for Andretti and the GoDaddy car.
I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear that announcement, Ed.
To be in the spirit of the season as it is, and if you listen to Mike and Mike in the mornings on ESPN, you'll know that I'm calling it now. It's a stone-cold lead pipe lock that Dan Weldon is going to be driving for Andretti next year.
Yeah, he's been whited and dyed with them, and they got the opening. And Weldon wants to compete in a car where he can win championships. And he may or may not be able to do that in the Andretti car.
Yeah.
He gives himself a hell of a lot better chance than he does. I mean, and again, no offense, obviously, but, you know, Andretti has the resources that Herta doesn't.
Yeah, so. You can't expect Dan to go, Brian Herta or Andretti?
Yeah.
They're just so equal to each other.
No. Oh, and it's not going to happen. One and won the Indy 500 with the other. Well, I could probably go out and win the Indy 500 with them, too, because I'm convinced that Dan Weldon has the ability to set up a race car.
Oh, certainly. And but beyond that, he's going to have so many more resources at Andretti. And especially since, ding dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah, right? And I think that Andretti needs a good setup, man, because Hunter Rey hasn't got the job done like Kanaan did.
You look at it, the guys they've got now, I think that they need an oval guy in there bad.
Yeah.
I really do. I think Marco's the best oval guy they've got.
Yeah, and I think Weldon would be a real threat week in and week out at the ovals in an Andretti car.
But then again, we're going to have like four ovals next year, so what does it matter?
What does it matter anymore? It's going to be awesome to see Weldon, though, take the banks in California, because I'm sure he'll have a job next year. I'm sure you're right. I'm going to just start acting like it already has happened, to be honest.
Nice. Nice.
So
it's been announced. We're our pre-recognition skills, you know, we've used our ESP and we
OpenPaddock can exclusively reveal in very out of sport-esque fashion.
Nice.
Well, another stone cold lock for next year is that Barber Motorsports Park is going to house their race on 1 April. So that is the date for the 2012 race.
Haha.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. It's no big surprise. We knew Barber was coming back. We're still waiting to hear on how many ovals they've managed to finagle into the schedule next year. And boy, we're hopeful that we don't lose Kentucky.
And I'm here to tell you, if you're looking at races that you want to go to next year to go and watch, you have to consider Barber. Have to. That place, I'm telling you, I went there and I was skeptical at first. That place is beautiful. The whole facility is like an amusement park in the sense that everything is meticulously clean, detailed. You know, you've got plants all over the place. I mean, it's just a fantastic facility. If you're looking for a road course race to go to next year, obviously I would suggest Mid-Ohio, but even maybe above that, I would suggest Barber because it's just fantastic.
Cool. Well, I would love to get down there, but I'm going to have to wait and see what's on the schedule next year before I make any decisions on that.
I will as well because my racing calendar's up in the air anyways.
Yeah.
And given work obligations and the fact of long time away from the country. But
Who
yes,
knows?
yeah, who knows? If I can make that one, I will definitely probably go to Barber because that was a lot of fun. It was a
Cool.
great track.
Well,
However, do
good
not
deal.
stay at the Hampton Inn right next to the base because despite what the guy at the front desk will tell you,
Cheaters.
it's $200 a night. So, just saying.
Nice.
I was a little pissed. But all right, well, in other news, for Vegas and Kentucky, we have Panther Racing coming out and saying that Buddy Rice will be driving one of their cars.
Yeah, very nice.
It's very
Glad to hear that.
I am.
Very glad to hear that, and hopefully it turns into something for next year.
Hopefully, it turns into the fact that can't Buddy Rice be eligible?
See, I've heard them talk about that, and no, I don't think Buddy Rice is eligible. I mean, the guy's Indy 500 win. Oh, wait a
Oh,
second, Dan
wait.
Weldon. Hey.
How dare you talk bad, speak of Rice that way?
No, I think he just has too much experience for them to consider him eligible for the $5 million bonus. But, you know, 2.5 million, it'd be nice to see him do something like that.
Mean, why can't you do this? Why can't you go five drivers equals, all right, five drivers, five fans. Draw them in a contest. If your driver wins, you get a shot.
I don't mind that, but it still doesn't have near the punch of bringing in people
Well,
from
no,
side sport.
it doesn't, but we already have, but I'm getting
Because
over that fact. I'm over that fact that it's
nobody
not going to
knows
happen.
who our drivers are, but if we bring in Kasey Kahne, we're somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry. I still don't like the idea. Going a completely different direction. I don't like the idea of you just bringing in anybody you want, strapping them into a car, and saying, "Oh, you can drive with the Indy cars now." No. Freaking Travis Pastrana, that's wonderful if they could get him to do it, but they're going to have to do a lot of work with a guy like Travis Pastrana to even get him anywhere close to ready to run flat out around that track.
Yeah, because first time he does it, Travis has got a huge set, but that is going to be some hair raising stuff right there.
Well, you know, Ken Block has a huge set too, and look where it gets him on the first stage of every rally he's in.
Crash. I'm saying, why can't you have Dan Weldon, Buddy Rice, say Thomas Schechter, who'd make it interesting? You know, pick five guys who just don't drive often this year.
Paul Tracy.
Yeah, Paul Tracy's another one, and then I'm sure we could find another one to throw in there. Five drivers, five fans. Put the 5 million up there. Have a drawing for 5 million, or the 2.5 for the guy who wins, and a 2.5 for the fan who is associated with that driver. Is it not having people from outside the series? No, I get it, but that's done. That's over with. It's not going to happen. So you may as well, instead of just saying, "Well, Dan Weldon, you can do this," put in Schechter, put in Weldon, put in Rice, draw five fans from IndyCar Nation, another way to show your fan club off, and give them a chance at winning the $2.5 million along with everybody else. You know,
Cool.
I think that's a good marketing strategy. Fans will sign up for your fan club, however fledgling it is, and people will pay attention because it may seem like a NASCAR-esque move, but it's going to work. And you have drivers who legitimately, Weldon, Rice, and hell, even Schechter, the way he's been going three wide around the outside, you got guys with a shot at winning the race, but you're not putting yourself in a situation where you've got somebody such as Dixon or Franchitti, who's damn near a lock to win the thing. You know, you've got guys who are not necessarily going to win this race, but have a shot at least. And that appeals to the fans. Hey, my driver won the Indy 500. Oh, so did mine. And he's won other oval races. You know, I think that if I'm IndyCar and I'm Randy Bernard, I say five drivers, 5 million, driver, pair with a fan, randomly drawn from IndyCar Nation, bada bing, done.
It would be interesting to see him do that. But
it's the right thing to do.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not.
How is it not?
It's not a good use of IndyCar's money to set something up like that, because it's not even going to be a blip on the radar screen.
And watching Dan Weldon drive as one man and one fan.
Fair enough.
That?
Fair enough. I'll agree. No, Dan Weldon isn't a blip on the radar screen either. I don't really care about this. I think it doesn't make any sense for Dan Weldon, or for them to be paying Dan Weldon to go out there and race for $2.5 million. What qualifies him to race for an extra $2.5 million? There are people on that grid. Their team money isn't $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get $2.5 million for racing an entire freaking season in IndyCar.
Oh, I know,
in
right?
Purse money. And you got one guy who comes in, wins the 500. Kind of a dumb luck thing, really. You know,
well, honestly,
yes,
yeah.
And then that qualifies him to go race at Vegas for another $2.5 million. He ends up coming out of the season with, you know, $7 million. And everybody else is sitting there trying to rub two nickels together to make heat.
They're like, what just happened? What just happened?
Yeah,
that could have been our money.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense for the series to be, you know, pushing Dan Weldon unless they're just trying to build up interest in the fact that he's going to be in that GoDaddy car next year.
Yeah.
And they're doing what they can to keep GoDaddy happy, to keep them around. They've made these overtures to GoDaddy. GoDaddy says, we'll be back next year. We'll sponsor the car. We'll sponsor the race. You just build it up as much as you can, and we'll make this a show for you. And IndyCar continues their little spiral down into WWE-hood. And we just all sit here and start to gripe more and more and more in the sport that we love, that we've kind of followed for quite a while now, starts to look more and more cheap.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, I'm just speaking. I think the money definitely could be spent better elsewhere. But I'm saying, if you're really going to go through and do this with Weldon, you should do all five.
Fair enough.
But you're right. There are better ways to spend the money. You know, maybe give them to some of your struggling teams like Conquest or something like that. I mean, break up the money and give it to them. Hell, I don't know. You know, because that's just, you know, that just needs to be done. But I mean, if you're gonna gimmick this and you're gonna do it Dan Weldon only, you should do all five. And that I think would generate more interest than just having one dude, one fan, woody doo. Ha ha ha. Awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Speaking of Paul Tracy, he is rumored to be returning with Dryan Reinbold for the final two races of the year as well. So not only would Buddy Rice be returning for Vegas and Kentucky, it sounds like Paul Tracy is going to be returning with Dryan Reinbold for those two races as well.
Mm.
Good for Paul. Not that it really matters all that much, because seriously, he hasn't shown much.
Yeah.
Dur-da-dur. Last on the list is good for IndyCar. Hideki Muto will be running in Motegi for IndyCar. He'll be taking the place of one Sebastian Saavedra, whose check no longer clears. no, I'm totally incorrect on that. I'm sorry. He'll be driving for Sam Schmidt.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. He is doing the Sam Schmidt.
Yeah. My apologies. One of the other guys that we just talked about. Paul Tracy's seat at DNR is Sebastian Saavedra's or something like that. That's not right, is he? Yeah. Forgive me. I don't remember. I don't keep track of this guy. Doug should be able to tell us, since he came from Indy Lights.
Well, I had a bit of a thing as well, is I just had a complete brain fart.
Okay.
But I will say that there was another guy who got picked up it was the Di Oliveira, I think he's the one who's going
to Conquest. Colombian driver, isn't he? I can't remember. Ah, well, didn't get it on the show schedule, and I'm not going to look it up right now because, in the end, it doesn't really matter.
I don't know. It's one of those things, I guess. It's good. The guy apparently is a hot shot at Motegi, does well there, so that makes sense for them, but.
Yeah, they run the Formula Nippon cars at Motegi. So if you've got people that know Motegi, and they, you know, IndyCars never ran on the road course there. So people with knowledge of the course are going to do well.
Yeah.
So maybe this guy does come out and do decently.
I don't know. I guess we'll just see what happens, you know. So, tough times in IndyCar. So,
tough time for the Dolphins too.
Oh, I know. I'm watching the game over here, and they're just looking like a wreck. The Patriots
They look pretty strong at the beginning of the game, but 38-24 with 2 minutes left.
Yeah. Oof. I've also lost my game that I was supposed to win. I was up 123-96 today, and now I am down big time.
Good.
Yeah, that I've just lost. I have nobody left to play, and he's put up 150 points. I mean, what kind of shit is that, to be honest? I mean, I'm sorry. Chad Henne sucks garbage, and he's 48 points tonight. I mean, you know something, Chad Henne? You and your little Michigan Wolverines bullcrap. I hope you dislocate your shoulder. There, I said it. I said what everybody else wanted to say. Don't judge me.
Wow.
You little troll piece of crap. Anyways, there you have it. That's a rough start to Sean's fantasy because I've now went from 1-1 to 0-2 because I also lost the tiebreaker in my other league. So,
Wow. You know, something?
I'm in a really bitter, pissy fantasy football mood right now. So on that note, we're going to hang up for the week. So, Mike, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yes, indeed.
So, we will be back next week with episode 106. Hopefully I will be rejoicing in the victory of not only my fantasy football teams, but my Jets against the Jaguars, as well as my Volunteers against the Gators. Oh, by the way, how'd you like that Rice game?
I didn't see anything this weekend, so
couldn't
tell you what happened.
You lost to Rice.
Wow.
You lost to Rice.
I lost. Aren't you a boiler?
Tennessee is my first pick for college football. I like just because of the hometown feel and everything. I feel a bit obligated, but you know, I don't cheer for them on a regular basis, I suppose.
Yeah, my wife's actually going to the Purdue game this weekend, and I have elected to not.
Who are they playing this weekend?
Couldn't even tell you.
Nice.
Don't even care.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks a lot for listening and downloading and everything. And keep up the great discussion. Our Twitter's really taken off. People really enjoy talking and discussing. There may be some stuff in the works for the off season involving our Twitter. So we'll keep you up to date on that because I do believe that we're going to do some things in terms. Brandon Marshall's injured. Yes.
Oh,
I said
my goodness.
It.
How can you do that?
I don't know. He's an idiot. He got hurt.
I'd beg to differ. The way you're talking right now, whew.
I'm just mad, okay? I lost my pick because of him and the other guy, so I'm mad. I'm sorry. I'm a Jets fan, so we're allowed.
For those of you following the Open Paddock Twitter, please send your hate spam to one Sean.
Yes, I'm sorry for the Dolphins fans, and I probably shouldn't be listening or should wish injury to the players, but I'm just a little pissed. So, but anyways, yeah, thanks. We'll try to do some stuff in the off season with the Twitter, get some chat stuff going on. I did a little feeling today on how it would work out, and I think it'd be great. So maybe we can keep the motorsports chat going while everybody enjoys the off season, wondering when they're going to hang themselves because there's no racing.
So, nice.
All right, well, thanks a lot, everybody, and have a good week. Thanks.